The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And yeah, Adam, did you know we have a ratings and review contest going on iTunes?
No, I had no
idea.
Adam
had no idea.
No, when you when
don't you listen to our shows?
he listens, but
we announced it. No, I think I announced it. And guess what happens when I talk? Nobody listens. You know, that's my motto. Oh, Doug talks, nobody listens.
Did you guys see this comment on Facebook? It's pretty crazy.
What does it say?
All right, anyway, Doug, what were you saying?
So I'm gonna bring this up just one more time. We're doing a review contest in iTunes, and it's gonna end Wednesday the 9th.
Okay, so they got to get him in before that date so they could get
judged, right?
And potentially win a prize.
Well, we're gonna look at him on Thursday the 10th.
Okay,
we're gonna decide, and the top three that we choose are gonna be announced on our future shows. And they're all going to get T-shirts.
Oh, perfect.
All right.
T-shirts in a car? Is that what we're going to do? A BMW?
This is an Oprah. Now, this is another issue we're having, Adam. You're promising.
You get a car.
You're promising everybody all these things we can't deliver.
Dude, it's T-shirts or
we're
a car.
We're going to give them your watches. How about that?
Whichever one we have.
I'm promising my shit. That's it.
And Adam, I understand you have a few cars that you're willing to
He's got
up,
a Rolex. So. Yeah. I saw.
Well, here's the thing. Adam wore the shirts through a workout. And that way, when you get it, you're going to have his essence on it. Just to spice it up a little bit. You're going to be able to...
You might be able to wring it and then get a
drop.
It's going to
smell like Axe body spray.
I do not wear Axe body spray, dude.
Axe body spray.
I hate the smell of Axe body spray. I hate the smell of cologne.
Smells like walking douche.
I hate the smell of cologne.
Chain.
Isn't it? I wanted to ask her. I should have asked our therapist that was just here about the...
Our therapist. It was a psychology professor.
A psychology professor. I felt like she was my therapist. Yeah. I should have asked her why that is. I've always had this issue with, I've never worn cologne. And it's like, you know, it's like the staple gift that people give you. It's like, cologne for
You've
Christmas.
You've never worn cologne.
I do.
Obviously.
I hate it.
I mean,
I'm a shower guy, dude. I shower three times a day.
Well, I wear aftershave. I don't wear cologne.
You wear aftershave?
How many karate. How many winners are we? How many wieners are we giving?
We're gonna give out three.
Again,
three.
Not listening.
Three. Yeah, not listening.
Three wieners.
And so, Adam, I'm on board with you on the whole cologne thing. I don't like it.
Ah, see.
But getting back to the topic at hand, please get those reviews out. It really helps us out. We really appreciate everyone who's already done it.
Yeah, all five stars, of course.
Love you.
Of course.
Yeah.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
I wanted to bring something up to you guys. And I feel like... I think we all agreed when we first started this radio show, you know, kind of the vision or the mission statement or whatever, even though we don't have a fucking mission statement. Why don't we have a mission statement, Doug? You need to get on that.
I don't know, but I think it's a podcast. I think that's the term.
We don't have a mission statement with that? You don't have a mission statement with the podcast?
No, he's saying because you call it a radio show.
Yeah, all the time.
It's a podcast.
Well, it's a radio show.
I feel like it's a radio podcast show.
Radio DJ. Radio means you're on the radio.
No, I think it's high time for us to have a mission statement.
I think it's a radio podcast show is what it's under.
You know what? I like it. I'll go with it.
We're at mindpumpradio.com, so it should be that, right?
This is true.
Well, I think Adam won.
That was the only domain available.
I think Adam just won.
Well, where I was getting at with this is that, you know, the ultimate vision of this was to give out, to debunk a lot of bullshit out there, a little bit of entertainment while educating people and having a good time, right? I mean, it's definitely awesome for us. And I think one of the things we didn't want to do with our podcast was we didn't want to be like those guys that are just like selling a product, right, and pushing their shit all the time. But then the flip is this, and the reason why I'm bringing this up is I keep getting this, and part of it's frustrating because we're trying not to be that guy who's like, you know, those guys that are always talking about their books and their programs and their stuff. But then I get people that are like listeners, right? And I had some, this happened to me yesterday. And that's why I'm talking about this is coming up to me and like, hey, you know, Adam, I love Mind Pump, this and that. I was wondering if you could give me some like really good nutritional advice. I'm trying to put together a diet, this and that. I'm like, have you read the nutrition guide yet? And they're like, no, what's that? And I'm like, our book. You listen to Mind Pump and you haven't got the book. Like,
that's,
oh.
that's the downside and, with not talk constantly talking about shit. Let people won't know.
Yeah, and they get excited. Yeah. They're like, you have a book on nutrition? Yeah, check it out. So, you know, I guess that this is me not saying, but saying that, you know, hey, we have books on nutrition. We have books on working out. So if you guys don't know this already, we have an inclusion guy. We have a, you know,
we have a full workout system set up there, nutrition survival guide. We have a fasting guide. The fasting guide is the one that a lot of times, because fasting has all of a sudden become this thing now. People are starting to talk about it more and more. Of course, we're the ones that really brought it up. I'd like to say first in terms of performance. Mm-hmm. Now you're starting to see the performance, you know, facets. People starting to talk about it in terms of performance. People used to talk about fasting in terms of health, but you never heard athletes really talk about it, or fitness trainers, anything like that. I feel like we were among the first people to do that.
I like to credit myself as being one of the first professional men's physique athletes to incorporate it into his diet while competing. That just is like a total anomaly for most people. Like, that, are you kidding me? You're not going to eat anything? Like, you're going to lose all the muscle you worked so hard for. So,
well, we actually have a member in our forum, and we won't give out his name yet, but he's been a longtime listener. He posted this the other day. He's been a longtime listener. He's been in the industry for 15 years. So he's been a personal trainer, been training people 15 years, listened to the show, was reluctant to switching his routine because he did body part splits, and was reluctant to changing his nutrition. He was eating the 1 to 2 grams of protein per pound of body weight. It was hard for him to make that switch, and I can relate, right? We can all kind of relate. Like, it's hard to make that switch for yourself because, oh my God, what if I lose my gains or whatever? Anyway, he finally made the switch, and he made the post the other day in the forum, and he's like, dude, this is fucking crazy. Like, my body's leaning out. I'm building muscle. I feel great. He's like, shit. And my comment to him was, it's freaking awesome when your paradigm is just shattered. Yeah. He goes, man, after 15 years, I can't believe that this would actually happen to me.
Super awesome.
Yeah, so.
That same person was also the person that leads me to, I guess this is what we're going to talk about. Posted something about an athlete's workout. Now, the reason why I want to talk about this.
Oh, right. That was the workout, the big old. Yeah.
So the reason why I don't want to roll the person on the bus, because it's not like the athlete's problem. It's more, and this is to our listeners, man. If you guys, you know, follow somebody, some men's physique pro or a pro athlete, or, you know, anybody else's workout, right?
That they do for themselves.
There's some major factors that we have to keep in mind. And I'm going to give you some examples of what I went through myself personally, from going from fat to fit and then getting into the competitive level of competing. And then also understanding genetics, man, is, you know, some people can handle a crazy amount of load, like can just hammer the fuck out of their body, and they do. They're built for it. And then they build this crazy physique, you know, that just handles moving crazy loads. They're genetic freaks, you know, and they're a small percentage of people. And
it's important you said that, genetic freak. Let's look at the top physique competitors, top bodybuilders, top athletes. What are they all? Are they all genetic normal?
No, they're all genetic.
They're all genetic freaks. Yeah. So following their exact routines is not a good idea for you.
Exactly, and that's where I'm getting with it. It's just like any sport too, whether it's basketball, football, you know, it doesn't matter. Those guys too. Like, what makes a pro is he or she is not somebody who just worked really hard at that. And I know everybody wants to,
part of it.
Yeah. That is definitely part of it, but that's not what made them pro. I mean, you can get in no matter who you are, you can get in great shape, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you know, if you compare you to this other guy or girl who is a genetic freak and you guys do exactly the same thing, you know, everyone is different. Everyone's going to respond differently to that. And some are like on a whole nother level. And so when you see these workouts with the amount of volume that some of these guys and girls are doing, and then they post them, or they sell them, even they sell eBooks on them of, you know, oh, train like this, you know, blasted whatever in X amount of weeks or days. And, you know, people purchase these things and get on board and like, oh, I loved it. It was so intense and hard. Well, here's the thing. It
took me 3 hours to accomplish.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, and I talk a lot about this when I first started my YouTube channel of when I first started being all, you know, the fat guy going fit. And, you know, you want to do as minimal as possible to elicit change, because, and this is the topic I want to talk about, is progressive overload. And I'd love to get in this with you guys and on your theories and your way of approaching this. And, you know, I'll just start by sharing how I am. And that is that you do not want to do balls to the wall right out the gates, because that's not a progressive overload. You're coming right out the gates running out with a guy who's been training for 5 years consistently as to build that physique. And you're nowhere near that physique, but yet you're lifting like that physique. That doesn't make sense.
Well, the other thing you have to consider is this is the mentality people go into it with. They think, I'm going to train. You know I can get my body to change if I train a certain way, but if I train even harder, exactly, it's going to make it change faster.
Right.
That's not true. In fact, it's the opposite is true. If you do everything necessary to get your body to adapt, anything over that will actually take away from your body. It'll take away from your body's ability to adapt, because your body is now dealing with more stress. It's now dealing with more to recover, more to repair, more to heal. So anything over what you need to change, not only is it just wasted time, it's also counterproductive.
Yeah.
It's counterproductive. And if you look at all the factors that influence a person's ability to handle load and respond to certain loads, you have genetics, which is number one by far. Everybody has genetics in terms of how much sun exposure they can have. And that's an obvious one. I use that one a lot because it's so visible. You know, you could be dark skinned or you could be super white skinned. They were both born with different tolerances for the sun. Okay. And it's just a very visible one.
Yeah, but we saw that in my Instagram picture. But, in the pool.
Yeah.
There's an example
where you were reflecting the sun. I got a tan Casper. Standing next to you because it came right off your chest.
Friend Nico's.
So there's genetics, and then comes how long that person's trained for, because you have your particular genes, but then you can really increase the ability of your body to adapt or to handle load just through training. So a construction worker who's been mixing cement by hand for 25 years, they've built up a tremendous tolerance to be able to mix cement, where you get the average guy who goes in there one day and they're going to be fried, right? So there's also how long you've been training. Then you have nutrition. Nutrition makes a big impact also. And the last thing is anabolic steroid use. That'll also make an impact. But it's actually all in that order. Like, anabolic steroid use will not give you better recovery ability than eating right. And eating right will not give you better, ability to recover and adapt than, length of time under exercise. And none of those will trump genetics.
Right.
None of them will cover genetics.
No, it's perfect.
But all of those together creates that 1% athlete.
It does. And here's here's the thing. If you're smart and you work with your body and kind of figure it out, then you're going to be, it's not going to really matter that much, because there's also, and I'm speaking in terms of now, let's just speak in terms of like physique competitors or people who present themselves on stage. Some competitors need, can handle crazy load and they don't look any better than the other guy who can handle less of a load, because there's so many factors that factor into that. So if it was just a contest of who can handle the most workouts, then that would be the ultimate goal. But I think the ultimate goal is, how well do I perform and how do I look, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
here's the gray area for all this, which is the topic I think Justin will like to dive into on his field of sports performance. Now, it's a little bit different there, right? Because let's say you want to, be good at your mile time.
Mm-hmm.
And, the progressive concept is a little bit different, right? Like, you're going to come out and you're going to run the mile as fast as you can every single time you come do it, to where you continue to increase, right? You might let off on some days, but for the most part, you're pushing to increase that, and you can, whether it be vertical jump, whether it be speed, whether right. it be, you're pushing your limits always, where when you're talking about burning fat or building muscle, it's a different world. It's a different mentality, and the progressive overload thing becomes a lot more important.
Right. Well, it's definitely accelerated on some degree, like you're mentioning, as far as the intensity goes and trying to overcome your limitations. I think what you're describing there, more than from a physicality aspect, is the mental aspect with athletes. I feel like the example being, the mile run time, right, that we had talked about on a previous episode where somebody had set the standard for that mile time. And it wasn't until somebody actually, you know, broke that time that by a significant amount that all of a sudden now almost everybody had something similar to that time or better. And it was this mental, I mean, obviously there was certain ways that they've been training and all these other contributions that led towards that. But for the most part, it was this mental block. It was the fact that nobody's ever done it before, you know, and now somebody comes along and just kills it.
Yeah, that's a true story. You could look that up. Roger Bannister, it's a 4-minute mile. You could look it up. You could see, you know, the scientists came out, said it's not possible. No one could ever do it. And he broke that. And then the next year, like 4 people broke it.
Well, I'm thinking more like this. And so let's use vertical jump and aesthetic legs. So both of them are going to use similar exercises, right? Can we agree on that?
Yeah.
If you're going to be working on someone's vertical and you want to work on...
There's a lot of crossover in the exercises.
Right? There's a lot of crossovers. There's a lot of squats and...
So, ground forces are essential, right?
Right?
Yeah. So okay. You want to get a lot of load that's pressing to the ground.
If I'm training aesthetically, the importance of me progressively overloading is extremely important so I can see that consistent growth and change in my quads. Mm-hmm. I don't really care that much if I'm jumping 6 or 7 more inches that week than I was the previous week. But now with if your primary goal is to increase vertical, then you don't care so much if the quads are looking bigger or better, if they're performing at a
and the only way you're going to know that is by testing at a high level.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, that's where the concept of it has to be more intensified in order to gauge that. And that's why too the training and the adaptation periods leading into the actual competing has to be smaller, right? There's a smaller window for that because or even the athletic career in general, it's not as long per se. Somebody that is just trying to maintain a certain physique, you know, they can maintain that for a longer period of time and remain healthy on some level in comparison to always pounding and trying to gain that level of performance from their body. Because the only way they're going to find that out is if they test it. And then my angle is really just to find that balance where I can get as much recovery after these bouts and keep them at a certain percentage that's going to allow for them to then adapt to the next level. And then we test again periodically.
Well, here's the thing that I think a lot of people, this is where people make mistakes, that they don't realize that all of the variables when it comes to exercise are related and influence each other. So let me explain. Here's an easy one. Intensity and duration are inversely related.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the harder I train, the less long I could train.
Right.
The easier I train, the more long I could train. So it's like running, long distance running, low intensity, long duration, sprinting, high intensity, low duration. Well, there's a lot more than just those two factors. There's frequency of training. And within that, if we go in and break it down, there's also the stresses that each exercise provides. For example, if you're doing, you know, a bunch of isolation exercises in a workout, that's not going to, and even if you do them with high intensity, that's not going to stress your body as much as a bunch of big compound movements are going to. So you have to measure and look at all these different factors in your workouts. You know, but how long I'm working out, how hard I'm working out, how frequent I'm working out, and the exercises within the workout. Because I know for myself, look, I could do resistance band exercises 5 times a day every single day. Mm-hmm. There's no way I'm going to be able to do, you know, Olympic lifting 5 times a day every day.
No,
you know, my body would fry. And the other thing,
unless you're a CrossFit athlete,
then you just keep going until you explode.
You just do that.
And the other thing that, you know, people don't, that they need to understand with this is that the body does improve its ability over time to be able to handle the load. And here's what you want to understand. Here's the thing. If you think of a meter on your body, if your body had like a little gauge and there's a line in the middle of that gauge, and to the right of that gauge is too much, Okay. If you go past the line, you've done too much. Now you're compromising your body's ability to adapt. And on the left of that gauge is not enough, or you could do more. Okay. If you're on the left of that needle all the time, you could still be creating change in your body, but you're not maximizing the change in your body. And if you're to the right of that line, you might still be creating change to your body, but you're impeding your body's ability to adapt by doing too much. Mm. And so really the secret's always to be in the line.
Oh yeah.
That's you're literally always almost overdoing it, but you're not overdoing it.
Listening to you explain this is really funny because it's very similar to the analogy I use when explaining the progressive overload concept. Is think of it like a drag race or a sports performance car, and the line or the needle is the red line. I mean, that's, you know, and
you're trying to keep the RPMs up, but
you're trying to run
too much pressure leads to explosions.
Exactly. And you don't want to be shifting the car way under the red line. You don't want to be shifting the car beyond the red line because you beyond it. Now you could compromise the engine and it could explode and stuff starts falling apart. And over time, you know, you build this engine. So you add parts to it, a better fuel rail, a better exhaust system to it, a turbo to it. You start slowly building pieces to it, which is going to actually increase the amount of RPMs that your car can rev up to and give you that ability to push more volume and harder.
But you got nitro.
But you want to slowly progress at that rate as you slowly build that. And you're always trying to stay right on that line. So you want to flirt with that line. You don't ever want to be drastically below or drastically over.
Well, so then here's the question. This is the million-dollar question that I guarantee is in the heads of all the listeners right now. How do I know? How do I know when I'm doing the mm-hmm. right amount and I'm not going over and I'm not going under?
It's like biofeedback, right?
Well,
it's like you're listening to your body.
Which is extremely subjective.
Yeah, it's very subjective.
Well, before you answer that, let's ask this. You know, what would you guys say is more common? Is it more common that people aren't doing enough, they're not flirting with the red line, or that they're overdoing it most of the time? What do you find more?
Depends on what kind of person you're talking about. Yeah.
If we're talking about the average American, it's obviously on the underdoing it. You know?
Well, I mean,
if it's the average.
If you're talking about somebody that goes to a gym, I would say they do too much.
Yep, yeah. They do too much.
Yeah. I'm not talking about the 300-pound person who comes to you and says, I've never been inside of a gym before.
Yeah.
They don't even know what a red line looks like.
No, you know what I'm saying? They know what a Snicker bar looks like.
Yeah. So I'm talking about the person who hires you.
And it's tasty.
The person that hires you who's been working out already for 5-10 years of their life already, and they're coming to you because they're
take it a step further. The three of us who are extremely aware of our bodies, we're very knowledgeable about exercise.
Yeah.
We're very sexy. Has nothing to do with what I'm talking about. Just want to throw
big
that in
dicks.
There. But massive. But
that's normally my line, bro.
The three of us who are
you snooze, you lose.
Who know all this shit, right? Where do you think we constantly find ourselves?
Over.
Are extremely aware.
Yeah.
You know? That's why the whole...
But we catch ourselves. That's the difference.
Well, dude, I'm going to tell you a personal story about myself. So this was more recently. I will constantly keep pushing it until I find myself way over the fucking line.
Yes.
And so this is what I was doing. My workouts were taken up to 2 hours long. I was doing all these sets of different exercises. I wasn't regressing, but I wasn't progressing too much. And I had to be very objective. I had to take a step back. And this is how I tend to approach it. As I look at it and I say, what would I tell someone else? Not what I would tell me, because in my mind, I can do it all, right? What would I tell someone else? So I had to check my ego for a second. I stepped back. I cut the volume way down. And boom, you know, my body started progressing again. And then it was very obvious that I was over that line.
Yeah.
But there are some objective measures you could take. You know, stronger. Now, this is not, by the way, if you're advanced, you can't always use, are you getting stronger?
No, because it's not linear, bro. Sometimes you take steps back.
And there's a limit. Look, if I got stronger this whole time I've been working out since I was 14, I should have a 5,000-pound deadlift.
Oh, dude. There'd be no curve to your strength.
There'd be no curve. There's a limit, right? It's like now if I add 10 pounds to a lift over the course of 6 months, it's a huge victory. When I first started, I was adding 10 pounds every week.
Yeah.
You know, so... But strength is, if you're a relative newcomer, strength is a great one. Are you getting stronger in the gym? Then you're doing good. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is endurance. Although when it comes to resistance training, you don't always want to push that because that's easy to go overboard. it's got to be how you feel. And I hate saying that, but
can we touch on something you just said about, yes. And this is going back to the progressive overload thing.
Caress it.
So you made a comment about, you know, when you first started, you could go up 10 pounds every single week, which I know you're just speaking hypothetically, you know, but I think that's where the mistake is people make a decision off of their intensity or that what they think the feedback is because they can do it. Because you can do it doesn't mean it's the best thing for you. So you, in my opinion, you are far better off doing a lot less if it can elicit change in your body. So here's a little my feedback on what I'm feeling on my body. I don't ever want to be too sore. If I'm fucking like deadly sore, like I know I was like, I didn't need to do that much. I'm like, that was beyond what I needed to do. I want to feel it. I want to know I worked out, even though, and let me make this clear as I'm saying this right now, because some people are like, oh, well, that doesn't mean so. I mean, okay. Just because you're sore or not sore does not dictate whether you
have. I'm glad you said that because I was saving that.
I know because we agree on this. Does it not necessarily mean that? But this is kind of what I've found with my own body is I kind of have this feel, what it feels like. And by feeling, it's hard to tell while you're doing it. It's easier to tell the next day for me on how my body. If I feel worn down and fucking hella sore, that was way too much for me. I totally went over that red line. You know, for me, if I feel it, I know I had a good workout, but my energy level still feels good and I feel good the next day, that's a good workout to me. And I feel like, and if I can feel it the next day and felt like when I went through that workout, it didn't kill me. After I got done with the workout, I felt great energy level.
So something interesting just popped in my head. I think a lot of people judge the effectiveness of their workout by the actual workout. And what I mean by that is while I'm working out, oh, I was able to get through that grueling session. What a great workout. Yes. Versus how they felt after the workout.
Yes, that's where I'm getting
at. The difference.
Because I've told lots of clients, after you should feel good after a workout. You should not feel dead or like you beat the shit out of yourself.
I think there's an element there, too, that I was sort of trying to touch on when I was talking about the mental state of an athlete. Because what is drilled into our heads from our coaches forever is that, you know, you have to overcome, you have to endure, like, you know, there's going to be moments where you don't think that you can tap into that and you have it. And it's the mental discipline aspect that carries you through these hard, you know, situations. And it's why that, you know, Navy SEAL sort of mentality is so glorified, is because they're so mentally disciplined, like so much more than you will ever be, that it just seems that people like to focus onto that. And so I think a lot of that mentality carries into workouts as well. And people think that because this person is so badass and so mentally disciplined, that means it's the best for their body to do that. When in fact, that's something totally different. You know, that's something for survival, or it's something, you know, maybe it's an Olympic athlete almost does need to focus on that because of the high pressure situation they're forcing themselves into. Right. Oh, yeah. So it's more of the fact that they're going to be in such a high intense situation that they need to prepare their body for that.
Well, this is why I wanted to get him going on this, because I feel like when you're talking about health, you know, overall well-being, you're talking about aesthetics, I feel like you can carve that off on one side, and then you've got sports performance on the other side, where there's that, and that's what I meant by the gray area. There's, you can flirt with it a little bit more, and it's less important because your ultimate goal is that stage, is killing it, is out beating that guy or girl CrossFit mentality or whatever like that. You're performing a sport, you're doing something ridiculous, you got to break through the mental barrier, the physical barrier. But let's be honest, is that the best thing for your metabolism? Is that the best thing for your body, overall health, right, and aesthetics? Absolutely.
There's a balance there that I think that athletes, you know, need to know in order to really, you know, gain more performance from. Like, it's obvious once I started to break that mentality, because I was in that. I was 100% that guy that was always coached to, you know, run until, you know, you feel like you want to puke, and you know, you have to do it. Otherwise, that person next to you on the other line is going to dominate you, you know, and so you're always conscious of that. Like, I have to overcome this really hard situation I'm in, you know, running 100-yard sprints or, you know, carrying somebody on my back and all this to show that I'm going to be resilient to this. You
know? The other thing, too, is, you know, if you're looking on your Instagram or Facebook or whatever and you see Mr. or Mrs. super buffed, you know, insta-famous person, okay, and they post their workout and it's, you know, 30 sets for their back or whatever. It's this ridiculous workout. You know, something to consider also, just because they look super buffed doesn't mean that they're maximizing their own potential.
Oh, not at all. Because that's exactly why I brought this up.
I have personally seen many times the super impressive buff person who you think is just maxing everything out do shit wrong, back off, and then boom, they go to another level. So just because they're doing that and they look crazy doesn't mean that they're doing the right thing either. Because like I said, the three of us on this podcast right now are advanced in both our knowledge and our application. And I constantly find myself over that line. I know you guys do the same thing where I have to check myself all the time. So I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of these people are doing the same thing.
Or it looks like they're, you know, at their highest state, but really they're about to break.
Right.
Right. So maybe they push so hard that they got some semblance of it, but it won't last.
No.
In comparison to, you know, there's another way to do that.
Is it too far to say this? What do you think? Is it too far to say that if you are, and when you're talking about Instagram and people like that, if you don't look anything close to like that person, you probably shouldn't be lifting anything like that person? What do you think?
Probably, but I mean, yes. And, you know, everybody's a little bit different with how their body responds to exercise. Here's the thing. If you're the kind of person that's going to respond great to 2-hour workouts of just weights, you know, every single day, you probably know. Like, you probably already know. You probably went to the gym, worked out, and no matter what the fuck you did, your body just grew. You know what I'm saying? But if you're that guy or girl who's already doing the body part split and they're getting no results and you're thinking, I should just fucking go nuts even more.
Even if that person, and this is the part where I have an issue with it, even if that person is that person, right? Genetically, they can go and then your body just grew. Just because your body is growing doesn't necessarily mean, too, that it's the most efficient way to do it.
Right.
So, because here's the problem I have, and this
always be asking yourself: is this the most efficient?
This is why I talk shit so much about CrossFit. Is that, you know? So, and I've had many, many people, even ex trainers, be like, you know, you can bash CrossFit all you want, but I'm in the best shape of my life doing CrossFit. I'm like, cool. I hope you plan on doing that till you're 75 to continue to look like that, because that's what your body's now fucking adapted to.
Yeah.
Because
how do they define shape? Why? Because they have more endurance now? Well, yeah, because before you didn't train for that. Mm-hmm. So, because now they're going to be like, well, now I can run.
Great point.
Yeah, now I can run a mile in this time, and now I can climb over walls, whereas before I couldn't. That doesn't mean you're in better shape.
No, they mean. They're meaning overall, better aesthetic shape, better physical shape, cardio shape, every shape, strength-wise.
I would challenge that all day long.
They claim that. But, I mean, it doesn't matter. The point is that the reason why they even feel that way is the amount of volume that they're doing and banging they're doing on their body, and their body's now becoming adapted to do all that crazy fucking shit. And guess what? If everything stays the same, the way they eat, their job, all the other activities and stuff like that stay the same in their day, and they get to be 50, 60 years old, and they still want to keep a healthy, good-looking physique like they feel they have, they need to be able to maintain that. They need to be able to maintain that type of intensity. Otherwise, what's going to happen? Atrophy is going to set in. You're going to see themselves regress because they're not going to be able to. And more than likely, what you're going to see, just like you see with any extreme in life, is a hard crash. You rarely see someone go to a crazy extreme in anything and then like kind of let up. You know, it's like you're extreme and you fucking hit a wall and then you crash.
And then you're forced to.
You're much better off, even if your body genetically can handle those retarded workouts, is doing this nice, slow, gradual increase and still getting change and still seeing the body respond to that.
Well, that's actually permeating a lot of the athletic industry. You're seeing more and more professional athletes training smarter, not just harder. Because there was a period there where it was just all about harder. But, you know, then they had some educated trainers come in and say, okay, everybody's getting injured. Everybody's getting sick. People are having to miss games. We got to fix this problem. But I did want to touch on the whole getting shape thing. I wanted to go back to that because, you know, when I was, you know, training really heavy in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, I was doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu 4 days a week for 2.5 hours, and I was lifting weights 3 days a week on top of that. And then every once in a while, I go do sprints and stuff. Mm-hmm. Now, was I in better shape back then? I was for Jiu-Jitsu. Like, I could grapple longer, but it depends on how you define shape. Was I healthier back then? Probably not. I was always constantly on the verge of breakdown. I was always kind of injured. I was always kind of hurt, kind of tired.
Yeah.
So when people come up to you and be like, you know, I'm doing this new workout where I'm fucking going nuts. I'm in the best shape of my life. What they think in their mind, what they mean is I can do more shit now.
How many times have you been sick? Best shape.
Right.
You know, in comparison to previously. And right. I remember talking about this with Doug because we were like, dude, I haven't been sick in a really long time, you know, and it was that shift. I could probably pinpoint it to when I started to stop going like focused completely on intensity. And then I started, well, obviously I started eating better. I mean, mm-hmm. that was a given. But really, like, my body's performing so much better because I'm working with it.
Actually, I remember the last time you got sick when you were doing the challenge. And you started pushing yourself too hard.
I can tell you right now, in the last 3 years, I've probably been sick probably 3 times in the last 3 years.
And how many shows have you done?
It's been on shows. Yeah. Anytime I've been
right after that's a why show. I brought, yeah, I remember that because every time you're leading up to like that last week.
Even guys like ourselves, when I'm pushing myself to that extreme, there I am flirting with the red line, going over the red line, you know, because I want these quick results. But that's the thing that I think is important, that we talk about how we kind of flirt with that line and we catch ourselves. But the key, though, is we catch ourselves. It never goes very long. You know what I'm saying? That's always, if I get sick, boom, huge red flag. Or, you know, obviously I know when I'm going into a competition, I know I'm already putting myself in danger.
It's not we're going to bully our way through this and like, whatever, I'm better than this. And I'm an athlete. And, you know, like, stop being a dumbass and listen to your body and work with your body and, you know, do things that, you know, practice what you preach. That's always another thing that's tough to do all the time.
Well, here's a tip that I do for myself. So let's say I'm working out and there's times when my body's progress. Everything's kind of, I'm hitting on all cylinders. Everything's perfect and I'm progressing. And then boom, I hit a new PR in a lift. Mm-hmm. I immediately, even if I feel great the next week, because my mind, if I hit a new PR.
You want to push again.
In my mind, the next week, I'm going to break that again.
Yeah.
But, and I've done this countless times where I've done that and hurt myself. So now what I do is if I hit a PR is I don't give a shit how awesome I feel next workout. I purposely drop everything down 15% or more or just go light.
Yeah.
And I do that for like a week or two. I hit a PR. The next 2 weeks are easy workouts. Because I already hit that PR.
Because now you want to adapt to an even, you know, higher level than that, right?
No matter what, you have to build back. Exactly. Because I know in my mind, I know that I'm a little twisted with my, you know, my perception of what I think or how I feel. And I know it's not an accurate perception. I know it's based upon the fact that I want to do better than the last time. And
It charges you too. And you get energized from the fact that you feel stronger and you accomplished, you know, more weight.
I just did it recently. Shit. What was it? Not that long ago. Was it maybe a month ago? I pulled 3-time body weight in a deadlift for the first time in my life. I was able to do that. And so what did I do? I'm like, well, fuck, I'm only, you know, 15 pounds away from this huge number.
Throw it on there.
And pull the muscle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, even now, I fall for this shit. And I hate the fact that I do that. I'm so much of a better trainer for other people. I swear to God.
Oh, yeah. It fucking sucks. Yeah. I'd roll myself under the bus all day.
I think a lot of
heavyweight.
All of us, we all know, too, though, that's why. It's because we feel confident that we've honed in that line. And so we're always really flirting with it. You know, we're so onto that line that it's like, you know, maybe I can get one more good lift out and then I need to go back. You know what I'm saying? Like, and so we always, I mean, I think that's it. Cause it's not like you'd be an idiot. The next time you go after it, you would do that right away. That was your red flag. Like, well, that's what I get. You know what I'm saying? Shame on me. I should have dropped back down, you know?
Absolutely. I would say for the average, you know, person, who's been working out, you know, for a year or two, most people will do great with a full body workout 3 days a week. If you're a beginner, a full body workout twice a week will get you far.
Oh yeah.
It will get you very far. I don't mean it's going to get you far because you're a beginner and you can only handle twice a week. I mean, twice a week will make your body progress very consistently, very well. You'll feel good and you'll be able to do it for a while before you need to bump it to a third day. Doug, when he hired me to train him, we did twice a week for years, and it wasn't up until recently he moved up to 3 days a week full body, and he looked phenomenal. So it's not necessary, you know, to try to emulate or push your body to that limit with your freak. If your body's progressing, I would say err on the side of I'm doing the right thing. If you're not progressing, and you're working out a lot, I don't know, back off. See what happens. See what happens when you back off.
So there's two ways that we can that progressive overload happens, right? I mean, overall, it's essentially equates to volume, but that's either going to be weight or, you know, set.
Weight or how long you're working out, more sets, or how frequent.
Reps are, you know, more frequent still would just add up to be more reps, right? So more reps, more weight is going to equate to more volume. And you don't want to go from, let's just say, hypothetically, your volume. So volume, we've talked about this before, is weight times sets times reps equals total volume. So that's how you get that number down. So let's just say your focus right now is chest. Maybe you want to, you know, bring your chest bench press up or your chest bigger, whatever it is. And in a week's time, you know, the amount of total volume on your chest, let's just say, you know, is getting 10,000 pounds of volume. So it's not a good idea the next week to be up to 20,000 pounds of volume. You easily could probably double that, and your body could handle it, and you probably could see some change, but you don't need to. You don't want to. I mean, you're talking like 5 to 10% increase in volume, and you'd like to see a nice little steady gain like that. And then, just like Sal said, you continue. You're given that little 5% increase, you know, until you hit the nice PR. You hit that PR, then what do? You regress for a week or two, and then boom, go back at it again, building again, slowly, incrementally going up. And this time, when your starting point should be a little bit higher, and each time it should be a tiny bit higher where you're starting, but small incremental increases, whether it be incrementally adding, you know, 2.5 to 5 pounds to your bench press, or simply adding, you know, an extra set or two to, you know, each chest exercise that you do in the week. Those are different ways to do it, but you know, going from 1 week all of a sudden, you know, doing a total of 20 sets in a week, or say, you know, 12 to 16 is probably standard. So let's say 12 sets the first week of chest exercises, and then the next week all of a sudden you're up to doing 20 sets. It's crazy. It's way too much. You don't need to.
It is, yeah. And it is. I mean, you add one set, you know, even though you feel like you could do five more.
Yeah.
No, you did more. I did more than I did last week. Leave it at that and watch what happens. Some of my best strength gains were when I would limit myself as to how much weight I would add to the bar, even though I knew I could do so much more.
Yeah.
As I said, okay, I'm just adding 5 pounds to the bar. Even though I feel like I added 10 to my lift, I'm just going to add 5. And I add another 5 the next week. And then before I know it, I've gone up, you know, 20-something pounds. Whereas if I pushed it too hard, I would have stopped at 10 pounds, you know, strength gain.
Right.
So, you know, you got to be smart about how you're training. You got to be smart about your load, the volume, you know, how often you work out. And if you are, your body will progress regularly. If you overdo it, which is the tendency, I think, amongst most people who work out, you're going to do yourself a detriment. Definitely.
Yeah, it is.
So, and don't forget to rate us, review us, and subscribe to us on iTunes.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. For more information about this show and to get valuable free resources from Sal, Adam, and Justin, visit us at www.mindpumpradio.com. Until next time, this is Mind Pump.